Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, this is J. Michael Michael, and if you love talk radio like I do and just can't find the right radio stations for your habit on the AM radio, well, tune into LA Talk Radio. We have it all, and right now we have the author's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, put your feet up, and enjoy, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Sisters, sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Never had to have a chaperone, no sir. I'm here to keep my eye on her. Caring, sharing, every little thing that we are wearing. When a certain gentleman arrived from Rome, she wore the dress and I stayed home. All kinds of weather, we stick together.
Well, welcome to LA Talk Radio. It is Thursday night. This is, of course, The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio with nobody because Bob Brill isn't here. But we do have on the line our other wonderful co-host, Bobby Jean Bell. And Bobby?
What a great piece of music you chose for tonight, Jim. Oh, my gosh.
Had to work, didn't it? You know, I was sitting there this afternoon, I was thinking, wait a minute, what kind of music can I use? You know, well, maybe I'll try Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte again. And then I remembered, no, White Christmas has that song, Sisters.
Yes, it's actually my sister and me. It's our favorite song. I half expected you to choose Moonlight Sonata
no.
this evening. But
oh, I didn't think about it. But
yeah, but this was perfect.
Well, here, let's listen to a little bit more. I love it. Hey, we got, I don't know what happened to Brill tonight. I told you earlier, I don't know if he called and said he wasn't going to, or he told me last week or whatever. I don't know. But, of course, you and I can hold a show because we always have.
Absolutely. And I know Ruth will be so eager to get in this conversation.
And that is true. And so without any further ado, our guest tonight is writer from Oklahoma, Ruth Ramsey. And she is like, she's like this really prolific little lady that sits there and writes these stories. And I'm going to let Ruth pretty much tell you about herself. Ruth, are you with us?
Hello, how are you?
Hi.
Happy Thursday evening.
Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of a short bio about yourself and kind of let them know who you are?
All right. Well, I was born and raised in Clinton, Oklahoma, and I grew up there along Route 66. And I have three children and lots of grandchildren, and I write about Oklahomans. And I'm kind of a late bloomer. I published my first book at 64, and the newest one, I'm now 66. And the thing that kept going through my head was the song, When I'm 64, you know, it was pretty neat. And I teach English, or try to, all they will learn. So that's pretty much who I am and what I am.
Well, I'm so past 64, I don't even remember being 64 anymore.
I'll never see 60 again.
No, man, no, isn't that the truth? I'll never see 64 again. I'll never see 66
either.
Again. So there you have it. This book that we actually read tonight, well, not tonight, but last week. Oh, what a great story. Of course, as the opening music tells you, it's about sisters. And why don't you just give us a little bit of a short story about the book, and then we'll get into it, because it's such a nice read.
Okay. Well, it's set in the last year of the Dust Bowl and along Route 66, somewhere in western Oklahoma in a fictional town. And there's a farmer named Gillespie, and they were settlers in Oklahoma, and father distrusted the banks and the grandfather, and so they hoarded their money. And when the stock market falls, and then, of course, the Dust Bowl blows in, they're able to survive because they've got all this money hoarded away in a little hidey hole and in the basement. And so anyway, they're getting by, and Farmer has two daughters, and one is Coral Lee, and she's pretty and bright and a boy magnet. And then we have Micah, who is the tomboy and likes helping her dad out on the farm, and that she kind of fills in after their hired hand quits. And that's where they are when this family drifts in an old truck. They're some of the people that are displaced during the Dust Bowl, and they have a very handsome son. And of course, there's immediate sparks between Coral Lee and Matt. And Micah is just sure that Coral Lee is just gonna be terrible to Matt. And so that's what drives the story, is the love angle and what people do out of motives and love. And she kind of loves Matt too, but he doesn't pay attention to her. And Matt is a dreamer who loves books, and he doesn't want to be a drifter all his life. And so he and Coral Lee both like books, and their relationship begins to grow based on their shared love of books. And the story just goes on from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the story opens with the two girls not speaking to each other, but now they're women. And
hello?
And then, yeah. Hello?
Oh, I lost you.
No. Nope.
All right. Okay.
But anyway,
okay,
the book opens with the two women not speaking to each other. And, of course, it's modern times, or at least, I guess, 1989. Mm-hmm. And then we go back and we see them now. Coralie is, I think, probably 17. She's in mm-hmm. high school, almost to the end of her last high school year. And Micah is, what, about 16 at the time? 15, 16?
Yeah, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
I didn't pin them to a certain age.
And they really don't get along anyway. I mean, one is just totally diverse from the other. Coralie, of course, is this prim, proper, hot little chick that, you know, runs around the Dust Bowl, and her sister is kind of like the one wearing the overalls and the checkered shirts and, you know, working mm-hmm. out on the farm. So, and I think there's a little animosity anyway.
There you go.
What brought this book up? And there's a couple questions I really have to ask you about this book. But to start, let's just get into what got you into this story to start with.
Well, it kind of springboarded off a story about someone long ago that was in love, and the guy went off to war, and she never saw him again. And it was supposed to be totally different. I mean, this thing wrote itself out. I'd never know what's going to come out of my fingertips when mm-hmm. I do this. And these characters took on a life of their own. And so it springboarded off of that. And added the sister for interest and just things like that. You know, I don't know quite where they come from. They just kind of well out of my subconscious and they're there. And so I sat down and started writing, and I would think a chapter was going to go one way and it actually went another way because characters wouldn't behave. So.
Well, that always happens.
Can I just jump in for a minute? Or, Jim, did you have a question?
No,
you were ready?
I can. My questions will hold.
This was a wonderful read, Ruth. I thoroughly enjoyed this book.
Thank you.
There were a couple of things that hit me right off the bat. You draw two families that come together. The one family is now kind of working for the other family, and you give us mirrors there. Matt and Coral Lee both being dreamers, both loving books, both aspiring and dreaming for, you know, something better in life. We have two moms. I loved both moms. talk a little bit about Matt's mom. She was really special, Amanda. She really holds that family together. Tell us a little bit about her.
She's a trooper, and she makes the best of her bad situation. She's not in good health, but she makes the best of both situations. And she, of course, Matt adores her. And he helps corral that bratty little brother of his.
Yeah, Abel.
And manages to slip off whenever there's something to do. Mm-hmm. And so she takes what she's given, and she, I guess life gives her lemons, and she makes lemonades. And she does have a little stubborn streak, especially about the sewing machine.
The sewing machine, yes.
Yes, for sure.
And she copes with her difficult husband, and she does keep the family together.
She really does. And those two little girls, the daughters, they just bring such joy every time those little girls are in a scene, you know, the way that they treat Matt and how happy they are to see Micah and all. They're just little bundles of energy. I just visualize those little girls in their flower sack dresses and just so delighted with everything in life, you know.
But can you imagine Abel?
Yeah.
There was a piece of work.
Now, the book is titled Candle of Dreams. Could you just touch a little bit on how you came up with that title?
Well, I started out with the title Dreams of Dust. And there were all kinds of titles that were Dreams of Dust. And so in the thing, though, Coralie's kind of like a light to Matt. And she's a candle. And then I'm playing with the idea that when you get too near the candle, if you're a little moth, your wings get singed. And so I kind of brainstormed with Carolyn Giamanco, who the book is dedicated to. And we came up with the title Candle of Dreams. It's really apt. And so it was real fun getting a cover for that, let me tell you.
Wow.
Well, let's put them off. Well, let's not do them off.
I want to get into that a little bit later, so don't give anything away on that one yet, Ruth.
Okay.
Now, the question I have is that this book is written in three parts, separate parts, and all three are first person.
Yes.
And that had to be, like, almost an impossible task. I find it hard to write anything in first person, much less three separate narratives.
Well, I had to become each person, and it was really emotionally draining. I wrote, you know, I'd get through writing a chapter. So, I had to become each person and portray the story, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, some books you read in first person or you have multiple characters, they bounce, you know, and then you have to go all the way back to the back of the story and come forward again, and it's really hard to follow, so I wanted to make this easy to follow, and so each person carried the story along, but they told it from their viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it was hard to write.
I don't doubt that at all.
I never do anything easily.
Yeah, I found it amazing that, I mean, you did such a good job of separating these three people out in your writing and in their dialogue. And it was just really well done. And I applaud you because I don't know too many people who could do that. That's kind of tough.
It was quite something to write. And, of course, you know, I teach English, and I tell people that characters are known by what they look like and what they say and what they do and what others say about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I took those principles and I applied them to my characters when I write.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, first person is easy to write in, but writing three first persons is...
Yeah, that's what amazed me. And I'm sure, Bobby Jean, that kind of amazed you as well.
Oh, it absolutely did. You know, I always love to ask that question about, I think this is the first time, Jim, that we've had somebody do three, though.
Three.
We've had two.
Exactly. The entire book was first person, looked by three separate people. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
It truly was.
Well,
I mean,
and And it was fun to see the story through the three eyes. I thought that it was sort of neat that we got the piano in there. And of course, this is 1939, and you make some wonderful references to the culture, the popular culture of the time and what was beginning to happen in Europe. It's not really full blown yet, but we hear the rumblings of what's happening there. The two daughters, the two girls, both play the piano, Coralie's a little better than Micah. But the piece Moonlight Sonata plays kind of an important role in a way in the book. It was the only piece my dad knew how to play on the piano.
When I read
that, and then how it was heard by the different characters, I could just see my dad at the piano in our living room, and actually it was kind of emotional for me. What made you choose that particular piece as the piece?
I've always loved it from the first time I heard it, and you know, when I say it tasted of dreams, well, that's the way I relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and dreams and longing, and it's a beautiful, dreamy piece. It's evocative of things that you want and maybe can't have, but that you want. Mm-hmm. And so I just love the piece, so I just wrote it in there. That's what mm-hmm. you do when you're a writer. You like
it's perfect.
Put it in there.
It's perfect theme music when they wind up down by the cottonwood. And nobody can see them, and they're doing their romance down at the cottonwoods, and of course,
yeah.
Moonlight Sonata. What else could be played? I mean, really, this is such a different book from A Far Journey.
Yes, it is, and it just, you know, the next one that I write is probably going to be even more different.
Yeah,
because it's going to be a really different book.
You're going to try first person?
Have you ever read the story Harrison Bergeron, where the guy has a little buzzer in his brain and he goes,
no.
So I've kind of been like that. And so I haven't settled down to write yet. I've been in the throes of house remodeling. So.
right.
Yeah, there's a book in there.
I can't deal with that and write too, you know, and teach school, so I haven't tried to write.
Ruth, who did you kind of think was your reading audience for this book? Did you have a target audience in mind?
Well, you know, I wanted older teens and maybe young adults, because Far Journey was written for 13 to 18-year-olds, but, you know, the older ladies loved it.
Yeah,
I had children as young as 10 read it, and then as old as 65 or 70 read it. And so this is kind of a young adult crossover, you know, for teens and adults. It's not. Now, one of my eighth graders read it, and she was like, "Man," you know, when she got through with it.
It was only later when I did a little research and I saw that it was kind of aimed at that audience, and I did not know that. I don't ever prepare anything before I read. I just want to approach it as a reader, and it never really occurred to me. I felt as an older adult, it was just as entertaining and engaging and illuminating, and I was eager to turn every, I won't say page turner, but I was eager to know how is this going to, you know, where is this going to go? So as an adult, I would say, read this book.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I tried real hard to, you know, I get into motivation too, Carrick. What made Micah act like she did? She didn't even really understand why she was acting that way, but she did, you know. And so the motivation of the characters were all there, and I played with the concepts of dreams. You know, Matt's dad says, well, I had dreams too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of left that hanging in the story and let you imagine what dreams he had.
Yeah.
And so they all had dreams. You know, Mama had dreams. Mm-hmm. Coralie and Micah's mama had dreams. I'm sure that Matt's mother had dreams. They all had dreams.
Well, and especially that time.
I just kind of played with the idea of dreams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially in that particular instance. I mean, these, you know, Matt's family was, they were nomads.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, so, and you know, I when I was reading about his mother and every scene his mother was in, you know what I pictured? I pictured Ma from The Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not old, but made to look, made old by the circumstances of her life.
Yeah. And she had, of course, you know, she was sick.
Right.
And
yeah.
Dust. And, you know, yeah. I had to do research on this when I was doing everything from, like, did they have paper plates in 1939 to where was the dust, you know? And not everybody realized, but not all of Oklahoma was a dust bowl.
Right.
It was mostly the Northwest and the Panhandle of Texas. And the dust, of course, would give them, of course, the dust would blow in and it would make your lungs crummy.
Right.
And they would hang things up over the doors and the windows and stuff rags to keep the dust from coming in and, you know, sweep it off. And so I did, you know, quite a bit of research. And then somebody told me, you know, a lot of them were poor and they didn't have much. One family said all they had to eat one time was chickpeas. And that was from a friend of mine. They were telling their story. You know, that their elders had told them.
Right.
And then there was the story of my dad when he lived through the Depression. And I don't know that there was a dust bowl down there, but he would go and work for 2 pails of milk and carry it home balanced on a pole to the family that he lived with. And so it was hard times. It just was hard times. And then everybody thinks that all the Okies were Oklahomans, but they weren't. They came from Missouri and, you know, Kansas and the Texas Panhandle. And a lot of people never left Oklahoma. They just traveled around to different towns in Oklahoma and lived in little shanty towns.
Right. And a lot of them wound up in Bakersfield.
Yeah, they did. I have cousins out there.
Actually, Oildale, to be exact.
Yes, I have cousins in Oildale and around Fresno and Bakersfield. And
That's where a big pocket of people from the Midwest came during the Dust Bowl and the
yes. And so your accents that you have out there are California improved Oklahoma accent.
Well, like Buck Owens.
It was just, you know, just something I did and that I had to do some research to get done. I think, I wonder. And then I had to, with the washing machine, well, what kind of washing machines did they have?
It had to be a double roller.
And so it was, you know, and they had the wringer washers,
right.
You know, and I don't know if Bobby remembers them or not, but I've got my fingers caught in those a couple of times.
My mother used to stand there and say, don't put your fingers in the rollers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ouch. You know?
And man, they would crunch you
for that roller. Yes, you did.
And of course, as a kid, you have to put your fingers in the rollers. That's just part of the deal.
Of course. You misjudge and your fingers get.
Right. Nipped. Yeah. You think you're faster than the rollers. Thank you for playing.
Well, I never put my fingers in there intentionally.
You do point out a couple of times that Matt is really in sort of dream mode occasionally working with his dad.
Yeah.
Was it on Digging Post? But he, you know, you do have to concentrate, even if it's something rote and mechanical that you do all the time. Mm-hmm. You remind us as the author that we do still need to focus on what we're doing.
Right.
Especially if you're working with Pap.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
Pap.
Yeah.
Another country heard from another guest on the radio.
But it's like
we don't want to give away anything because we really would like our listeners to read this book. But I will just ask this question. Did you have a variety of different endings that you kind of played with or tested?
No, I actually wrote the ending first.
You did.
It came to me first. And so I had to write the story to fit the end.
Got it.
Because the last sentence in the book was one drove the drove the story, you know. So, mm-hmm. But it took me a while, you know. I thought, well, I want to write. I want to do. I want to do this. Or I want to do that. And I hate having to make choices because I always think they're all equally good. And so I finally settled, you know. And I wanted to work in, you know, that I worked in the soldier going off to war and the letters.
Right.
And things like that.
Right.
It finally fell in place.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that the letters from Matt that Micah kept hidden for all those years, I don't use this word lightly, nor do I use it very often, but they were extremely poignant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you.
I think there's a Hallmark movie. Is there a Hallmark movie in the future for this?
You know, I checked out Hallmark, and they want happy endings, and they want sunshine and sugar.
Well, sometimes they surprise, you know, a really good vehicle.
I would
sometimes
love it if someone
sometimes
would make
I'm surprised.
Movie.
Yeah.
I would love it. But,
yeah, Hallmark, they want happy, dappy, and clean language.
Yep. To be a movie.
Yep. Hey, I'm going to take a couple of minutes. I'm going to do some commercials, and then we'll be back and talk to you some more, and I'll give out the phone numbers, and hopefully your brethren will want to call and talk to you. So hang on. Don't go away, and we'll be right back to you, okay?
All right.
Okay, then. You're going on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but, what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provide your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country-like setting. Your dog gets to be, your dog gets to be a dog. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. So visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, it will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. Well, as we all say, it will be the dog's. So give them a call, 805-524-1100. That's All Dogs Rule in Fillmore, California. And Bobby Jean, I believe you have something you would love to say.
I do. F. Scott Fitzgerald states, life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall. And Out West agrees. Time to rework your wardrobe and refresh your attitude. Add a leather or suede jacket, pull on a new pair of stylish boots, slip on a jaunty sweater or wrap, a dash of cinnamon, a splash of cobalt blue, a warm red, and a swing of fringe. Out West Shop has just what you need to spice up your life with a touch of the West. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com for the best of fine goods inspired by the West. Enter coupon code WB9 and receive $10 off your order. Call us toll free 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day. Where, Jim? Out West.
And, you know, I happen to personally know these people, and golly, they are truly this bright and shining. Okay. You've typed your final period. You've stacked your last chapter, and you sat back in your chair, and you said to yourself, whew, I'm done. Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. You know what it takes? It takes editing. It takes rewriting, and then more editing, and then more rewriting, and formatting, proofreading, more rewriting, more editing. Then, if you're lucky, really lucky, you can devise your cover. You can get some proofs printed. You can go through them, and you can finally approve a book, and pretty soon you'll have a book you can have printed and on your coffee table that you can give away to your friends. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing. and help you get some dollars in your pockets as well. We are here for new writers that don't have the foggiest of what they're doing. So having learned it, we share and we get you a book of which you can be proud. So give us a call, 805-795-3165, or email at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or R. Paolinelli, that's P-A-O-L-I-N-E-L-L-I, at tuscanybaybooks.com. Or just send us a manuscript and let us navigate the rest for you, and we will do our darndest to give you what you really would love to have on your shelf. Of course, everybody gives them away. Nobody sells books anymore, so there you go. And if you out there, if you're a new writer and you would like to have some rules, basic rules for shameless self-promotion, give me an email or give me a call, and I'll make sure that you get a copy of our shameless self-promotion instructions. It's about 3 pages long, and it's pretty informative. Okay, we're back. It is now 7:30 on the dot. We are on the phone with Ruth Ramsey, the author of Candle of Dreams. And if you'd like to call and talk to Ruth tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And now that my mouse is working, I'll be able to answer the phone. So every time I think I have a great opening, the mouse doesn't work. Live radio, I hate it. Anyway, we're back to Ruth. Ruth, I have to say, yeah. And I went on Amazon, and of course I looked at both your books. I've already read the other one, but I looked at the cover for this book, and then we talked the other night, and I found out something very special about the cover to this book, and I know that you've been chomping at the bit to give out that info, so this is the time where you can throw mommy pride out in the wind, and let's find out where the cover came from.
This cover was taken from a photograph by my son, Sean. Hang on just a second. No.
Live radio,
my
gotta
son,
love
Sean,
it.
And he is a photographer, professional photographer who does landscape, and he's a storm chaser, and he takes storm pictures. And he recently was selected for the Old Beautiful series. One of his pictures is included in the stamp series for the USPS. He's had his work on Criminal Minds and been National Geographic Photographer of the Day. And so he took this picture called Never Winter. And I said, oh, Sean, can I use that cover? And he said, sure, Mom. So we cropped and we fixed until we got the cover. And so the cover is by my son, and the book is by me.
And he only charged you very little for that cover. No, he didn't.
I got mommy privilege.
Hey, you know what? You earned it.
Yeah. Well, I'm tremendously proud of him. So
I can tell. Yeah. That's absolutely, Bobby, have you seen the cover? You went on Amazon and looked at the cover, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Doesn't it just look like the book?
I thought that was such a great story, and it makes it so personal, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It follows through with everything.
You don't see how pretty the picture really is, because you can actually see the stars on the book cover.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more depth in the book cover than you'll see on Amazon.
Yeah, and the house looked exactly as I pictured it in the story. So, I mean, it's like, wow. That's like perfect.
I had to look for a two-story house, and the graphic designer and I went back and forth, and she'd send me houses. Like, no.
Yeah.
How about this one? No. So after 2 weeks, and then so I told her, I said, I want to use one of my sons, and I said, I'll get permission. And so was sent back and forth, and the original has cows in it. And it was taken of an old house near Jet, Oklahoma. It had cows in front of it. And I'm like, I don't want cows on the front of the book. So Sean photoshopped it and shopped them out. And she's sending me emails going, are you sure you don't want cows on the front? I'm like, no, I don't want cows on the front.
Well, maybe one.
It took us a while, but we came up with this cover and the font. And I was quite pleased with how it turned out.
Okay, so let's finish the mommy proud thing. Go ahead and give us your son's website, because I was there the last couple of days looking at his photos, and my God, that man takes beautiful pictures.
Yes, www.southernplainsphotography.com. all one word.
Right, and that's Plains with an S, so it's plural.
Yes.
Excellent. And Bobby, if you haven't been there, make sure you write that down and go look at those pictures, because he's got some phenomenal storm photos.
I will.
You can't believe.
There's one that he took, and it's not up on the website, but it has a storm cloud over the little gas station in the town where I teach. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a dramatic photo. It's got the co-op station and the storm cloud.
Do you anticipate maybe, Ruth, that one of his photographs will inspire you to write your next book?
Well, I hadn't really thought about it. I've got an idea for another book that I won't share yet because it's still nebulous, and I've jotted down a few things, and I think I've got maybe the first couple of pages written, but this one was inspired by a sentence that came to me. And so I'm just going to go with that. I don't know. Maybe someday I will, but I haven't really thought about that.
We've noticed on this program that there's a lot of writers that have said their books have been inspired by comments made by people, by sentences, mm-hmm. by thoughts they have when they're watching TV, by dreams. One book came up because of a dream. Mm-hmm. And if you're a new writer and you're listening, when you have these things, write them down, because you know some of them are really germane and they make good stories, and you don't know how much story is in a sentence.
Right.
Well, my first book, A Far Journey, the whole scene came to me. The whole scene of the first page, it came to me, and I wrote it. The second book, I had kind of a germ of an idea. And then, of course, I said I wrote the last page first.
Right. Well, you know,
I don't do things.
You're not the first one to do that.
I'm just kind of different. So. But this one is, there is a sentence in it that's going to fuel the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And it will kind of have a theme. And I'm going to try my hand at writing in third person, which I find incredibly hard after having written two books in first person.
Well, if I remember correctly from your interview in March of 2017, and I apologize, I did not go back and re-listen. I should have, and I started to, and I got sidetracked. But I believe that you had told us at that time that you worked about an hour away from your house. Is that right?
I work about 25 minutes away from my house. And 20 if I really want to speed, you know.
Right.
And I don't have to dodge tractors and combines.
Well, sure. I mean, you live out there in rural Oklahoma. But
we're out in rural Oklahoma, and every now and then we get behind a tractor and, you know, or farm equipment.
Those guys don't want to move over for anything.
They had a bridge out for a while going south, and I had to take a back road from my house down to where I worked. And I'm going down that road one day, and here comes this big old piece of farm equipment. I'm like, oh, Lord, because the road is barely two lanes wide. It's, you know, and that's pushing it, you know.
Sure.
So he got way over by the fence row, and I drove a little off on the grass, and we got around each other.
Okay. You live in rural Oklahoma. Aren't all roads back roads? I mean, really?
No, we have some highways out here. Nice.
The 40.
Okay.
They've been reworking bridges, so... When they rework the bridges, you learn every dirt road and back road, and they have little farm to market roads, you know, and so you learn where to go.
Gotcha.
To get around.
Gotcha. Well, they have rural routes too, right? Don't they? Let's talk about a little. We have actually about 15 minutes. Well, not quite 15 minutes, about 10 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about your process in that when you find time to write. And you're a busy lady. I mean, I know you teach school. The other night you didn't get home until almost 7. You were remodeling your house. Your husband hasn't exactly been up to snuff. So, I mean, where do you find the time to do your writing?
Well, right now I haven't found a lot of time, but we're here, and the kids are grown, and they all live off somewhere, and they're busy with their lives, mm-hmm. and so it's just us and the dogs, and so when the mood hits me, I write.
Gotcha.
And I might write for an hour, or I might write for three,
mm-hmm.
or I might write all day if the mood hits me.
Uh-huh.
And I just can't sit and force it. I've never been able to. Right. I write poetry, and I've never been able to write, just sit down and just write a poem and make myself write on a certain thing. But it comes to me, and I do write.
Do you prefer morning or afternoons hard. Or evenings to write?
Well, it just depends on the time of day and when I have time and, uh-huh. you know, what I have to do. And usually most of my writing was done in the afternoons and on Fridays and Saturdays mm-hmm. on this one.
Oh, okay.
And I was out on summer break, so.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, Bobby Jean, I know you're chomping at the bit to ask the question.
Well, I was curious. We always talk about editing. Jim, you talk about it a great deal. Ruth, were there things that you, when you went back and reviewed, were there things that you did edit out of the
book?
Well,
sometimes I would write and I would come back and I think, what in the Sam Hill did I write? It's like, where did that sentence come from? And I would rework it. But if it makes you... feel any better, you know, I started this once and then I didn't like it and I restarted it.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so, you know, I really didn't write anything out. What happens is things cook in my brain as I go around and do things and then I sit down and it comes mm-hmm. out.
And it comes and, out. Mm-hmm. Were there any...
thought out of my mind.
Because this is your second book, were there any lessons you learned in the writing of the first book that influenced how you went about the creative process for the second book?
No, I just learned editing is forever.
Oh, yeah.
Editing is forever.
And you know, you never get it all.
No, you don't. You know,
never get it all.
You read it, and you read it, and you read it, and then you have someone else read it, and they find mistakes, and you fix those. And then I think Bill sent me 3 proof copies, and I think there's still a mistake in there.
Yeah, there's always, you know, I read stuff by Penguin and by, you know, Simon & Schuster. I find mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you can't find them all, but I learned over the years that don't edit your own stuff because you can't do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you write the mistake, you'll skip over it.
And then I try to get a second pair of eyes because I used to work at a newspaper, and they always, we like to have, we would proof it, and then if we could, we could get, they said proof, have 2 other people read it
mm-hmm.
so that you could catch the mistake.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because after a while you get blind and
right.
you think you've read it. And
right.
When I'm teaching my kids to write, I say, now you get your rough draft done, put it aside. And don't look at it for a while.
Yeah.
And then come back and look at
yeah.
it. Because you get blind to what you've done. You can't just
that
run around and edit what you did.
Yeah, that and don't
and
let your
also,
editor proofread.
Get your ideas down and don't edit yourself to death as you write.
Right.
That's what I did with the first one. It had to be perfect. It had, and it still wasn't perfect. You know, and so don't edit yourself to death.
Right.
You know.
Do you read your reviews? Ruth, do you read
question.
Read your reviews?
Yeah, I do. I read them.
And
pray I get good ones.
do you suffer fools when you read a bad one?
Well, I got a kind of one on Goodreads I didn't like.
Ah.
But then I saw what the person was reading, and I'm like, well, no wonder he didn't give me a very good review because all he likes is the fantasy stuff. And this is not fantasy. These are these are slices of life.
Yeah. Right.
And they're
right.
not for everyone.
Right. And I like your genre that you put down as a genre, the young adult crossover. I think
yes.
that's very descriptive of what this book is. And your last book as well is actually.
Yeah, the last book was designed a little more for youngsters mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. this one is, you know, young ones. And I'll tell you the cutest story. I had a signing at Barnes & Noble, and there was this little girl, and Daddy had a whole stack of books, and, you know, and she came up, and I got to talking to him, and he was telling me how she did this wonderful graphic stuff on the iPad, and they showed me, and we talked, and she really wanted a book, but she was so shy, and she was like, Daddy, can I have it? You know, go ask your mother. They wound up buying a book, and and all, but she was maybe fifth, sixth grade.
That's the right age.
She'll remember that always, Ruth, you know, I think those one-on-ones with an author when you're, especially when you're young and you're really getting into reading, that's like a powerful moment, you know, to actually meet an author is a really cool thing.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it's really cool.
You never know what's going to stay with a kid.
Yeah, but it's really cool for authors to meet the fans too, and the people that come up and talk to them about their books. It's just a great experience.
The last signing I had, it was Little Old Man Day, and I
wait
had
a minute,
him,
Little Old Man Day. Is that what
yeah,
you said?
And it was,
good
this
Lord.
This man came in, and he was on a cane, and I said, "Good morning, how are you?" And he says, "I'm looking for my wife." And I said, "Well, what does she look like?" And I said, "Maybe I'll know what. Maybe she went by, and I saw her." And he says, "Well, I'll tell you this much: she's the most beautiful woman in the store."
Okay.
And so then. This other little old man on a cane, and I bet he was 85 if he was a day. And, "How are you today, sir?" "Well, I don't know. I'm not a doctor." And he said, cracked him. He said, "Why would you even ask me that?" And I said,
"Oh my gosh, dialogue.
Being polite.
That's dialogue for a future book.
Yeah.
And so then here came this little old man that did remind me of my daddy, and he's coming in, and he says, and I said, "How are you today, sir?" And he says, "I'm looking for my wife." And I'm like, "Oh, here we go." And he's in. I said, "Well, I don't know if I've seen her or not. Well, I'll tell you this much. She's the most beautiful woman in the store. And by this time, I'm having deja vu." You know? So pretty soon, he and his wife go by, and they're like arm in arm, and it's just so sweet. it was little old man day looking for their wives. You know?
There you go. Well, Ruth,
I've disappeared into Barnes and Noble when they had to go hunting for them.
They're big stores.
But well, I enjoy the people when I do book signings.
Excellent.
I have as much fun as.
Well, Mrs. Ramsey, we're out of time.
I know this time
has flown by, and it has for me, and I'm sure it has for Bobby Jean. So if you wouldn't mind, give our listeners your email address and your website, if you have one, and your Facebook and all that good stuff.
I have a Wix site that's up, but it doesn't work well. But I do have Facebook pages for A Far Journey.
Okay.
And for Candle of Dreams. And they link to Amazon. You can order it through Barnes. You can order Candle of Dreams through Barnes and Noble and Amazon. And it's available in ebook format in both places. It's also sold through, I think, Kobo and Smashwords.
Okay.
As well. So there's several different outlets that you can get them. But when you Google it, you'll have to do Candle of Dreams, Ruth Ramsey, or you're going to get all these weird candles and scented candles.
Gotcha.
But my email is deslove, deslove, at yahoo.com.
Okay. deslove at yahoo.com.
Yes, sir.
And the book is Candle of Dreams. Ruth Ramsey is the author, and available Amazon, online booksellers. And you can reach her at deslove at yahoo.com or Facebook. Check her out. The book is phenomenal. It's a fun read. It's not a real long read, but it's really, really, really good. So thank you thank you for joining us tonight, Ruth. It's been a hoot having you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, truly.
We're having a little rain out there to clear up your drought.
We'd like that. Well, probably December, January, we'll have some rain.
Yeah, I put up a meme today. I said, "Well, I need whoever prayed for rain out here to pray over my bank account." We have had so much rain. Backstroke to work. You know?
There you go. Okay, Ruth, we got to go. Thank you so much again. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
And have a great day.
You do as well. And let us know when you got that other book done.
All right, I will do that.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Ruth Ramsey in Candle of Dreams. Good book, huh, Bobby Jean?
It was a good book.
And
it was a good
it
book.
Was.
It's kind of still haunting me a little bit because it's pretty powerful.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, what Micah pulled was really horrid. Really horrid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those lessons, things that you do early in life. Well, any time in life. But you don't really think through all the potential consequences.
No, you don't.
That's the human condition.
Right.
And those consequences is really what drives this book.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Continually. Yeah. Just consequence yeah. after consequence after consequence. Yeah, for sure. Next Thursday, the October 25th, we have Eleanor Koons with us. Her book is called Devil's Gold Dish. I believe Jerry has sent that to you, has she not? Or no, wait a minute. That's a rest night.
Yeah, I'm not with you next Thursday.
That's yeah. Next Thursday is a rest night, I believe.
It is. It's the fourth Thursday.
Yeah, okay.
Already the fourth Thursday of the month.
I
my
know.
Goodness.
God. Well, October, already the end of October.
I know.
Oh, crap. I mean, how's that
yeah.
happen? So, I don't know. Bob, I don't know where you are, but we missed you. What can I say? I don't know. You know. Anyway, we've got...
Well, you had me. You got me.
I know. And, you know, I love having you on, so... It was golden. It was just golden.
Yeah.
So this year, we're back booked up. Next year, we are booked through April. And...
Yeah, you're booking... We're booking next year. Where are we at? Do you have any sense of...
Yeah, we're booked through April.
Where we are in the year?
We're booked through April.
We'll book through April. Wow.
Next year, yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that great?
I know, huh?
Yeah.
I know. So anyway, Bobby Jean, have yourself a wonderful day. Rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Have a little more Bailey's.
I'm going to go have some now.
Oh.
I'm gonna go. I haven't had any yet tonight, but oh. I'm heading right for that coffee pot and that Bailey's to go
good
with
girl.
In my mug. Yeah.
My best to Jim. And for Bob Brill.
I will.
Myself, Jim Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Writer's Block. And we are out of here.